Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Save big money at Menards. Never get locked out from lost keys again. Menards carries a huge selection of electronic lock sets. Get a TrueBolt touchscreen deadbolt that features one-touch locking and 50 programmable user codes. Available in matte black or satin nickel finishes on sale now through September 8th at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big money at Menards. Never get locked out from lost keys again. Menards carries a huge selection of electronic lock sets. Get a TrueBolt touchscreen deadbolt that features one-touch locking and 50 programmable user codes. Available in matte black or satin nickel finishes on sale now through September 8th at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, May 21st, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer Bill Bria.
What is going on?
Bill, welcome back to the show. A big part of the reason that I wanted to have you on is because you recently had a chance to see a screening of Bad Boys Ride or Die, which we're not going to talk about in any detail or really in any way at all in this episode, other than to say part of the reason that you went to the screening was because accompanying that was an opportunity to visit, I think it's called the Porsche Experience, where you went and you've been there before. You went for Transformers, the most recent Transformers movie, and you wrote a whole article about that for Slash Film, but you went back because they were having basically like an event for Bad Boys Ride or Die, and I just wanted you to tell me about your experience there.
Yeah. So I've been lucky enough to go to the Porsche Experience Center in Carson, California before for Transformers Rise of the Beasts. And it is a lovely place, especially if you enjoy cars and car culture and driving fast. They have, you know, as I mentioned in my article for Transformers, they have this large sort of experiential track or several tracks, in fact, that are there in the back sort of, you know, ranch area of their center. They do also have, it's not a factory, they don't make the cars there, but they do some maintenance and other sort of detailing or repairs or stuff to trick out the cars, as far as I understand it, because they don't let you in that little section that is actually where the mechanics work.
Okay.
I think they do stuff in there that, you know, typically it's either for very VIP clients or, you know, racing teams, that sort of thing. So
okay.
That's kind of what that section's for, which, you know, I've only been seeing from the outside. I haven't been privy to go in there yet. But they let us around the rest of the facility, which has a little bit of a Porsche museum. And, you know, there's some really, you know, cute art in terms of different racetracks around the world, you know, all of which obviously Porsches have been part of as racing entries. And the tracks themselves are... they range from obviously there's a race course, you know, there's a standard. I don't know enough about racing culture to tell you what the name of a standard, you know, loop course
like an
is
oval
called.
Shaped
an
kind
oval
of thing.
Shape, yeah. And so they have that, of course. They also have an autocross section. They have an off-road section, which looks really cool. It looks like almost like a Hot Wheels playset, but in real life, where, you know, there's like a log bridge you can drive the Porsches over. There's a none of which I got to do, by the way. They didn't let any of us do that. Maybe on the next event.
That sounds pretty hardcore.
it looks really hardcore. What we got to experience this time around in the Drive Like Mike Lowry section of the experience for Bad Boys was, I think they call it a hazard course, where there's several, you know, permutations of the hazard course. Last time for Transformers, they took us on one which has this electronic or mechanized, what they call like a kick, where when you drive over this platform, it actually, you know, at the, I assume at the touch of a button or maybe a pre-programmed timer, it kicks the back wheels of the car out from under you. So it almost puts you into a spin. So you have to rectify that and try and
get out of it.
This time we did it not with the kick machine, but with just plain old water, which was the hazard of the day, which was just a pretty much a flooded little, you know, section of track where you would roll over it and not go any faster than, I think we our top speed was maybe 30 miles per hour. And you know, that's enough to sort of set things in motion with the car. Now, depending on whether or not you have the anti-lock brakes on. So, you know, standard is to have the anti-lock brakes on, and therefore it's actually not too hard to sort of get out of a spin if the water or the hazard's putting you into one. But they do have us turn those off to experience what it's like without it. Which, you know, is on the one hand harder and more dangerous because, you know, you don't have the electronic, you know, mechanized control of those features in the car. You turn them off. However, it also gives you, the driver, more control. So you have the ability to drift, to like lean into that spin and sort of, you know, drift around a corner of the track in a way that you see in, you know, pick any action movie with a car in it, but certainly yeah. Bad Boys. I'm happy to say I did fairly well at that. I just want to pat myself on the back now because I will be doing the opposite of that in a minute. And we also were taken on the autocross course, which is a section of open track that they cordon off with various cones where you're essentially just doing, you know, a hairpin turn or a going like full throttle out on a straightaway and then making a left and, you know, making that tight turn out to another cone and then doing a zigzag motion. What do they call that? I know there's a name for that too, but you know,
like a
cones,
slalom or something.
Slalom. Thank you. That's what I thought of, slalom, before you do a dead stop. And the idea is it's a time trial. So you do it as fast as you can. In my group that I was taken out there with, I got the second fastest time. There was one person a little better, a little faster than me, but that's okay. You know, nothing wrong with second place. however, I should say that the stars, Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, were present on the day. They did a very cute thing where they started the day by bringing all of us attendees up on the balcony area of the center to look out at the track. And they staged like a faux police car chase, complete with, you know, sirens and flashing lights and everything. And I don't know if Will Smith was driving the Porsche the entire time that we were watching that, or if they did a classic like Texas switch where there was a professional and then they went around the bend and out comes Will's car. But anyway, it made it look like Will was driving the whole time with Martin in the passenger seat. So they got out, they did a little intro to the crowd and talked about the movie for a second and then, you know, talked about the experience. So that was very cool to see them.
Yeah, that's different than the Transformers one. I don't think any of the stars of that movie were there with you last time,
no,
right?
No. Well, I mean, hey, technically, the Autobots could have been there, Ben. We don't know. All right?
You're absolutely right.
There's,
yeah,
there's still some classified documents in the CIA we just can't talk about. But no, no stars were there. But I will say that the Marcus section of the experience, because there was Mike Lowry and then there was Marcus, was Marcus's snack run, which is referencing a running gag in Bad Boys Ride or Die, where Marcus just really wants to get some snacks. And the email that they sent to us detailing what these experiences were going to be, they described Marcus's snack run as an obstacle course. And so in my head and a lot of the heads of my colleagues and peers who were there, we thought, okay, this will be, you know, what you kind of used to at a amusement park or some sort of gym where it's like, you know, some sort of little space cordoned off where there's a little running course where you run from target to target and pick up snacks or, you know, something like, I don't know, a Nickelodeon game show or something like that, right?
Yeah.
No, it was literally American Ninja Warrior. they had this entire obstacle course built, constructed, maintained, you know, this whole way by, and they literally had people from American Ninja Warrior, the literal American Ninja Warriors, some of whom have been on your television sets, there to demonstrate how to run the course to all of us. And I think that just goes to show you that, you know, when you sign these waivers, if you don't read them closely, you don't know what you're getting into. But hey.
So how'd you perform in that arena?
Abominably. I will say I was at least chuffed enough or, you know, pleased enough to realize that the personal training that I've been doing with my friends twice a week with weightlifting and everything like that, it is having an effect, because I was not as afterward, the experience was over, I was not as sore as some of my fellow competitors and everything like that. Everybody was complaining about cramping and, you know, how much they were injuring themselves. And I was like, you know, I only feel bad about my pride. Really, that's the only thing that hurt it afterwards. Because what's crazy is that, you know, that you have a running start, which isn't so hard. You jump on a trampoline, and the idea is to use the trampoline to get yourself up to the top of this net section, which you're supposed to climb over the net up one side, up down the other side. And those nets,
like in the army or something?
Yeah, like in the army.
Okay.
And what's crazy is the reason why they put the trampolines in front of it is because you really need to use those trampolines to get as much headway on that net as possible, because if you start at the bottom of the net, there's no way you can get up, just by virtue of the fact that the net material itself, it's like, I'm trying to describe it, like a, you know, if you sit in a couch and you feel like you can't stand up, if the couch is like swallowing you almost.
Yeah,
it's like that. The more you struggle, the more it seems to swallow you up, so you really need to like use the momentum to get over it. So I did not go over the net. Next I think was a balance beam, or, you know, like running across a tube, you know, and not lose your balance, which I did. Then there was another one where you had to swing over a pile of fake alligators, like, you know, balloon alligators. It was a mixture of these swinging pendulum things and ropes. Then you were supposed to, I think, take a actual thing of Skittles, put it in your pocket, and swing over something else. There was monkey bar section. There were rings section. There was a section you're supposed to throw a little package of candy through a hole into a bucket.
They're really just like doing the bare minimum to involve snacks.
Literally, as when you first read that email, you're like, oh, you know, I don't want to eat too much there, so maybe I won't do the snack run just because I don't need to have too many snacks. And really, snacks were not part of this. The joke was on us in terms of like, if you wanted to get snacks, good luck. You had to really work for it. It ended with, I don't know what you'd call it, but a ramp that you were supposed to run, almost like a skate ramp, you know, where you would run up and try to get to the top of, and
yeah,
then climb down a ladder. Then you were supposed to grab a jelly squirt gun and shoot the movie's bad guy in the face with the jelly. And then the last part was you kick open a door, you know, just like a cool bad boy. And that part was actually the easiest. And then you were at the snack shop and you could grab snacks. But by that point, I was barely breathing. So,
well, I appreciate your sacrifice, Bill. And certainly it translated into some entertainment for me and hopefully our listeners as well. So
well, you're welcome.
Tell me about the driving experience, like how it compared to what you did there earlier for the Transformers movie. Like, did you, what was your top speed? You mentioned during one part your top speed was like 30 miles an hour, but was there ever like a straightaway where you could just like hit 100 yeah, miles an hour or something?
They do have a straightaway part of the course there, which unfortunately, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was weather reasons, but they wouldn't let us kind of open up the throttle on. They did for Transformers, and we got, you know, I think upwards of 100, 120, something around there.
Wow.
Here, I think the fastest I ever went was probably close to 80 or 90 during that straightaway of the autocross course. Because there's a little bit of a straightaway they had there, but, you know, it's pretty quickly you've got to start turning, and then, you know, you're going to lose some speed at that. So, yeah, we didn't get as fast an experience as last time with Transformers. And again, that might have been due to weather. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
Because it was an overcast, kind of weird, you know, weather day. Not bad, but just definitely like, you know, not bright, sunny, mild, anything like that.
Yeah.
But I think that what it really proves, and both these trips prove, and this one certainly continue to prove, is that the Porsches, the 911s, which is generally what we were driving, the 911 Carreras, I mean, they're incredibly powerful cars, but I will say that there was one part of the experience they did offer this time, which I declined based on last time, which is the ride-along, where you can get one of the professional instructors there at the center to drive you around the race course as fast as possible, but you're a passenger, you're not the driver. I don't recommend that to people with weak stomachs, because there's a reason why, you know, Porsche isn't in the business of, let's say, you know, building or selling school buses or, you know, any other transport vehicle, because all of the power that you have as the driver, as the operator of a Porsche, when that power's out of your hands, I mean, your body just kind of feels it. It knows, you know, and it's like, it's not ready for those turns. It's not ready for the speed, you know? So
yeah,
some people can handle it, but, and they did make a point too of telling us at the experience on the other day, like, you know, hey, if you're feeling sick, speak up, because we've had too many people think they can take it, think they can handle it, and then suddenly the car's pulled over, the door's open, you know?
Oh, so. Man. Yeah, that would be me if I was there. Like, I do not do well if I'm not driving, just in, like, you know, suburban neighborhoods or whatever. So let alone going, whatever, 80 miles an hour in a Porsche. That's wild.
If you call an Uber or a Lyft and they show up in a Porsche, cancel the ride.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so let's get into some movie and TV news here. We have to talk about the Fantastic Four casting updates. I think originally on this podcast, we talked about the official word that Pedro Pascal, Vanessa Kirby, Joseph Quinn, and Evan Musbachrach are the main characters. And I believe we talked about Julia Garner playing a female version of the Silver Surfer. But since then, there's been a slew of new casting news about this film, which is coming from Marvel next year. Ralph Ineson has been cast as Galactus. Ralph Ineson, you may recognize as the guy who played the Green Knight in the movie The Green Knight. He was also in The Witch. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in The First Omen earlier this year. And he has just a terrific voice. So it seems like a pretty cool fit for Galactus. I'm not really sure what they're going to do with that character. Traditionally, in the comics, he's like this multi-planet sized being who literally eats planets and sends the Silver Surfer out in advance as kind of his herald to sort of like let citizens of these planets know that they're about to be consumed, basically. Galactus has actually been depicted in the, I think it was the Tim Story Fantastic Four movies from like the mid 2000s.
Yeah. Rise of the Silver Surfer. Yeah.
Yes. As just a cloud, a literal cloud. So I don't know if there's going to be some sort of motion capture element to whatever they're doing with Ralph Ineson. But you know, cool voice. And even if he's a cloud this time, I guess at least he'll sound cool. So there's that. And then also John Malkovich, Paul Walter Hauser, and Natasha Lyonne have joined the movie in unknown roles. So we have no idea, really. We could speculate about what those would be. But I don't know. Bill, do you have any thoughts about any of these people joining this movie? Or just sort of like, where are you on the Fantastic Four right now? What's your excitement level, if there is one?
I think the sky's the limit for Fantastic Four. I think the prior FF movies have suffered from not really landing on an identity for the characters and for the property by itself. You know, the Tim Story ones were entertaining in a early 2000s, you know, superhero movie kind of way, but they did fit into that cookie cutter, you know, this is what a superhero movie looks and sounds like kind of style from that era. And then of course the other one, what was his name? The guy that did Chronicle.
Josh Trank. Yeah.
Went the other direction so hard that it really alienated a lot of people, and understandably so, because, you know, that is definitely a take on the material, which, you know, because of people, I'm sure, behind the scenes starting to get a little antsy about what he was trying to do with it, it feels like it didn't go hard enough for me. You know, it wasn't like, wow, this is so unique and so new that you can't help but appreciate it. It there's definitely things to like about that one, but it's still a little off, right?
Yeah, so, for sure.
I think Marvel is definitely, I'm sure that, you know, obviously Feige and who's our director for this? I forget.
I want to say it's Matt Shakman. I think that's right.
Yeah, I think they have obviously a mandate, I'm sure, of, you know, trying to really emulate the comics as close as possible in their tone, which is very, I'm not going to say family friendly because that gives a different kind of connotation, but it's one of the most upbeat, I would say, Marvel properties or cast of characters. It's got a kitsch to it, which is very usually endearing, you know, usually very charming. You know, it comes very much out of, like, you know, the sort of tradition of, I would say, almost like how I feel the Fantastic Four, you know, what they say to me is it's almost like if the Jetsons were superheroes, you know?
Yeah.
And this cast that's we have so far that we're talking about now, I think it really indicates that they are interested in character actors, you know, really people that, you know, bring a lot to the table. They're not just movie stars per se, you know, where it's like, oh yeah, it's Tom Cruise. Okay, we got it. You know, cool. You know, from Pascal on down, like Ralph Ineson, you know, is a great choice for Galactus. Hopefully his casting means he's going to get to do a little bit more than Dormammu got to do in Doctor Strange, the movie. You know? But it's a similar type character of just this outsized, you know, galactic force, you know. So maybe he'll be closer to a Thanos type character, you know, and we saw what Josh Brolin got to do with that character. So,
yeah,
I think I'm really encouraged. I think, you know, if they lean on the family dynamic and the weird science of it all and the sort of retro sci-fi, I think it could be really fun.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic about that. I do have to mention this other thing involving Marvel, which is we actually have an article, I think it was Devin Meenan that wrote this, that is basically, it's called Marvel Studios is Dealing with a Decades-Long Comics Problem. And this is jumping off of an interview that Brad Winterbaum, who's Marvel Studios' head of TV, streaming, and animation, gave to comicbook.com, where he said that Marvel Television is coming back, basically. So Marvel Television used to be a completely separate entity from Marvel Studios, and like the Netflix Marvel shows and ABC's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff like that were under the Marvel Television banner. I think it was in 2019 when Marvel Studios got rid of Marvel Television altogether and said, all right, all Marvel shows now are going to be under the Marvel Studios banner. We're going to be producing this stuff in-house. There's not going to be this sort of butting of heads that was going on between Kevin Feige, who is on the film studio side, and Jeff Loeb, who used to run Marvel Television over on this TV side. So we're going to try to unify everything. And now Brad Winterbaum is saying that Marvel Television is coming back, and there's basically Marvel Studios is like splintering up all of their TV stuff again, just to try to entice people into coming back into the world of Marvel and checking things out without thinking, hey, I can't watch all this because in order to watch Project D, I have to watch 50 million other things in order to understand what's going on. So Winterbaum's quote here is, part of the rebranding of Marvel Studios, Marvel Television, Marvel Animation, even Marvel Spotlight is to, I think, try to tell the audience you can jump in anywhere. They're interconnected, but they're not. You don't have to watch A to enjoy B. You can follow your bliss. You can follow your own preferences and find the thing you want within the tapestry of Marvel. You know, on paper, maybe, but like in practice, I'm not really sure that actually works at this point. They've kind of like that genie has been let out of the bottle. I don't really think there's any coming back from that, regardless of what kind of rebranding they do or what kind of logo they slap in front of any given TV show. I mean, we talked about this with Echo when they said, hey, here's this Marvel Spotlight thing. It means you don't have to know anything about these shows. And then, of course, you did have to know a little bit about what happened in Hawkeye to understand what was happening in Echo. So, yeah, just kind of silly stuff from Marvel, but I just thought it was worth bringing up here, and also worth trying to drive some attention to Devin's article, because he basically argues that like the Marvel comics themselves have been dealing with this same issue for decades at this point. So now Marvel Studios is basically just catching up and dealing with that same problem on the television side of things. So
yeah, Devin did a really good job with that article.
Yeah, I don't know if you had anything to add to that conversation, Bill, but I just wanted to.
Oh yeah, no, I've had thoughts. I mean, I used to be a comic collector back in the day, where I had, you know, subscriptions at my local. You know, I used to live in New York City, so it was Midtown Comics that was closest to me, and you know that thing where you'd have a pull list and you'd tell the staff like, oh, make sure to pull these titles for me every week and all that jazz. You know, I first got into comics in a way that allowed me to, my entry point was like, there was a lot of trade paperbacks that were being sold at the time. This was like early 2000s when the X-Men movies were coming out. And, you know, it was easy for me to sort of quote unquote catch up, and not on, you know, how at that point, what, like 40 years of comic history, but just the big, you know, titles, the big event, you know, story arcs or something like that, mm-hmm. which was enough, you know. But of course, as things continue, and they have since, you know, for Marvel, the 60s, you know, that's just staggering pile of content, the staggering pile of narrative or story or history, you know, it's daunting for literally anyone to get involved with. You'd have to dedicate your entire life to Marvel only. And, you know, nobody wants to do that, I don't think. So that's always been the problem. And Devin really is succinct in summing that up, in the sense that you can sort of get away with it in a lower stakes environment like comic books, because, you know, for instance, I used to read Amazing Spider-Man religiously for years, and then I've since dropped. But I do feel if I ever wanted to start again, I could go to the local comic shop and be like, hey, what arc is Amazing in right now? Are they near the end of one or near the beginning of one? And if they were near the beginning, okay, great. Give me the start of that arc and then I'll just go from there. You know, there's like less pressure. Whereas with filmed entertainment, you know, we're still in this era, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe as a experiment, you know, on screen is still relatively new. So we're used to decades of, and again, not too many decades of sequels, reboots, legacy sequels, remakes, requels, whatever. And in, you know, in most of these instances, you should have some sort of working knowledge of the franchise, the series, what have you. You know, I think it's going to take a while for Marvel to James Bondify itself, for lack of a better term, where, you know, that series, for better or worse, has really found its own niche in terms of, okay, you can start from Daniel Craig and go on. You can start from, you know, this Bond and go on. You don't even have to watch all of the Connerys or all of the Moores, or, you know, you could jump into Moonraker and be like, oh yeah, I get it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think Marvel could get there, but yeah, you're right. I think that right now they understand that there's a lot of people that really love the lore, that really love the interconnections, that really love being rewarded for being fans, you know, loyal fans. And so they probably need to move away from that. And it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't, where it's like, you know, if in order to really break away, you're going to have to make some shows or movies even where, you know, it doesn't pay off, you know, X, Y, Z. And, you know, some people will complain about that, but, you know, it could be a way forward.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break and then we'll be right back. We have a bunch more movie and TV news to talk about.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Save big money at Menards. Never get locked out from lost keys again. Menards carries a huge selection of electronic lock sets. Get a Truebolt touchscreen deadbolt that features one-touch locking and 50 programmable user codes. Available in matte black or satin nickel finishes, on sale now through September 8th at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
Save big money at Menards. All right, so one thing I wanted to mention real quick, we don't have to get into a whole thing about this, but there's going to be a new Roadhouse movie. So I don't know if they're going to call it Roadhouse 2 or whatever, but Jake Gyllenhaal is coming back to play Elwood Dalton in a Roadhouse sequel for Amazon's Prime Video, because apparently nearly 80 million people watched the Doug Liman version, which debuted on Prime Video back in March. So there's that. I don't know. I kind of feel like they got away with one a little bit with this, because I didn't hate the new Roadhouse. I didn't love it. I mean, it's not nearly as like weird or interesting or of its time as the original Patrick Swayze movie is. I had, you know, some fun with the new one, but like, I don't know, the idea of coming back to that world and trying to explore something, it just doesn't really appeal to me personally. But I don't know. Are you drawn to the idea of Jake Gyllenhaal playing this character again, Bill?
You know, it's got its charm, but I do think that it remains to be seen, really, because we don't have anything to compare it to, because unfortunately Swayze's Roadhouse did not get a sequel. So, you know, whether this turns into just another bad guy situation, or whether it turns into like a drifter kind of, you know, going from town to town situation. You know, I don't know what the Roadhouse as a franchise would look like necessarily. And I don't think that Gyllenhaal and Liman's movie necessarily really sets anything up that would indicate what that is. So, you know,
yeah,
it's exciting on one hand where it's like, oh, it could be anything. But on the other hand, it could also be just the same thing again.
It's interesting because like the Swayze version of the character was they called him a cooler. He's basically a bouncer,
right,
by trade. So like he got poached in the beginning of that movie from one bar where he was working security to go to another. Mm-hmm. Jake Gyllenhaal's character was hired, you know, from like from doing street fights, basically. He's this sort of like a failed UFC or disgraced UFC fighter, mm-hmm, who is just doing, you know, scrapping around, making money in underground fights and stuff, to run security for a restaurant that is literally called the Roadhouse. So it's not like a natural progression for him to go be a bouncer or a cooler or whatever at another Roadhouse, because this was just a one-off thing in his life. It reminds me of like the Die Hard sequels kind of thing. Like, okay, now you're telling me that this same thing is going to happen to this guy again. Like, it just kind of seems I don't know, a little iffy. But
if they choose to go that route, they would have to do what, you know, Die Hard 2 does, where it's like, how could the same shit happen to the same guy twice? You know, all the constant callbacks of, oh, I can't believe this is happening. But then again, you know, like you said, he's a disgraced fighter. So this could pivot hard and go into, you know, a Rocky style movie where he's just back in the fighting world for some reason, you know. I don't know where they would go, but, you know, they'd have to work a bar in there somewhere. But
yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm not like writing it off entirely, but just like at first blush, this does not necessarily sound all that great to me. I've mentioned on this podcast before that I've never seen Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later. I have not caught up with 28 Months Later as well. But we've talked a little bit on this podcast about 28 Years Later, which is the new, I guess, continuation of that franchise that Danny Boyle is returning to. And Alex Garland is coming back to write. So those two are reuniting. We had a story that came out a few days ago about Cillian Murphy, who was the star of the original movie. He's going to be coming back. So, Bill, I just wanted to ask you real quick, like, what are your thoughts on Cillian Murphy returning to this world all these years later?
I'm very excited. Not to give, you know, super spoilers away, but this is a, you know, what, almost 25-year-old movie right now or something like that. You know, it's 28 Days Later was a unique entry in the, I'll say, zombie subgenre, even though they're not technically zombies, blah blah blah, whatever, we can get that debate later. It's unique in the sense that most of the heroes survive. You know, it isn't necessarily a bleak, you know, post-apocalyptic George A. Romero story of, you know, oh, everybody's gonna eventually die. And so, even though in Romero's films not everybody dies, but that's a different story. So it was really sweet to see, you know, his character survive to the end, and we haven't seen him since. And, you know, not only is it a natural kind of progression to be like, hey, let's check in with that guy, what happened to him, and hopefully Naomi Harris will come back too, because she was a big part of the first one as well. I think that was the first time I ever saw her in a movie. And, you know, 28 months later really expanded on the world of the 28, like, I don't know what we call this franchise, the days, the years,
the
months,
the 28, I don't know.
28s, you know, but it really expanded on the world of what's happened, you know, post rage virus, and how, you know, basically what we're used to in a post contagion, post COVID world of, you know, how the pandemic spread and sort of things. So, I'm really intrigued to see what they do with this material, and it's so nice to see, you know, Mr. Oscar winner come back to the franchise that kind of started his Hollywood career.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Tom Rothman, the head of Sony, said that Cillian Murphy will be back, quote, but in a surprising way and in a way that grows, let me put it that way, end quote. Ooh. So I'm not really sure what that means because I haven't seen these movies, but I wanted people to know about that. We also wrote a story, this was, I guess, last week as well, about Sydney Sweeney's Barbarella remake, recruiting one of the best directors alive, and that is Edgar Wright, who is now attached to direct this movie. So I've never seen the original Barbarella. I feel like I've seen pieces of it, maybe in like a film class or something way back in the day. But this movie came out, the original movie came out in 1968, and it stars Jane Fonda, and it's this big sort of flashy kind of like sci-fi, almost like a Flash Gordon type of visual vibe to it. Have you seen the original Barbarella?
Yes, no. I have. It was part of, I believe, producer Dino De Laurentiis's push in the late 60s to really capitalize on, you know, comic book material of that age. You know, of course, this being the 60s and, you know, superhero comics were still, you know, certainly in Marvel's case, in their nascency. And then, is that a word? In their infancy?
Yeah,
all right.
I think so.
And then, you know, of course, DC had been around for longer, but really these comics were obviously very European. Barbarella, and the other one I'm thinking of is Danger Diabolique, the Mario Bava film, which came out almost the same year, or maybe within one year of each other. But yeah, Barbarella, the Roger Vadim film, it is very of its time. It is certainly sexual revolution oriented. I think I might be wrong, but yeah, there's the, I was about to call it the orgasmatron. There's something called the ex-sexive machine, which induces fatal sexual pleasure. at one point the Barbarella has to survive. This is also famously, where the band, the new wave, new romantic band from the 80s, Duran Duran, gets their name from, because there is a angel type character, his name is Duran Duran, played by Milo O'Shea in that movie. It's a very erotic and very it's explicit without being explicit. It's not a nudity filled movie, but it's certainly very sexy and very interested in pushing boundaries of, you know, taste or, you know, exploration of sexual ideas and mores and mores or, you know, morality, that sort of thing. So up till now, I don't think any of us would call Edgar Wright a sexy director. So it's intriguing to see him take on this material. I do definitely think he can bring the kitsch to it, you know, based on obviously his, you know, Cornetto trilogy and Scott Pilgrim. Like, it's going to look great. There's no question.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. But I mean, Sweeney, you know, she's pretty sexy herself, all by herself. So
we'll see. Yeah, it's a fascinating project for her because it seems like she's fully aware of sort of how the industry is looking at her right now. And she's like full on, by remaking Barbarella, she's like full on embracing that and basically like trying to grab the narrative by the horns herself and like lean into it and control that story in a way that I find really smart. So yeah, I've had the original Barbarella in my queue for a long time, but I need to watch that before this new film comes out. But yeah, I'm curious as always to see what Edgar Wright does. And yeah, it's just interesting that he's working now with both of the stars from Anyone But You. Like, he's working on the Running Man remake with Glenn Powell right now too. That's so right. Very cool. Okay. So last story that I wanted to mention on today's show is that Donnie Yen is going to be starring in a spin-off movie from the John Wick franchise. He's going to be reprising his role as Kane, the blind character who is this sort of awesome badass that showed up in John Wick Chapter 4. And we know that he's going to be coming back. What do you make of this, Bill?
I'm excited. I mean, obviously the post-credit scene of John Wick 4 hinting at this continuing feud between Kane and...
Her name is Akira.
Akira, yeah. Rina Sawayama from the same film is super intriguing. And it was intriguing for a couple reasons. One, of course, there's obviously still a feud there, some story there between those characters. And also whether that post-credits was hinting at a John Wick 5 or, as we now know, the spinoff. So, you know, I think the next entry in the franchise or the universe, Ballerina with Ana de Armas, is due to come out first, I believe. So we'll see what exactly a John Wick spinoff looks like before this. So we'll get a better idea of like what this might entail. But, you know, when you have people like Donnie Yen and Rina Sawayama, who's so great in John Wick 4, I'm just excited to see them fight.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I heard really, really bad things about The Continental, the TV spinoff. Yeah. So I did not dip into that world at all. But yeah, the jury's still out on whether or not the John Wick franchise is strong enough to be able to sort of withstand or like sustain a bunch of different movie spinoffs. And obviously like Lionsgate wants to tap into that and milk it for all it's worth. But you know, it's hard to complain about a new Donnie Yen action movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. At the very least, it's like Donnie Yen's the lead in your action movie. We're going to see it for sure.
Yeah. All right. So I wanted to read a couple more five-star reviews. I've been putting out the call asking folks to leave five-star reviews for the podcast. And I said that I'll be reading them on the air for a little while, just to try to help get us and, you know, game the algorithm and get us in front of new listeners and things like that. So Clark's Creek says, listening to Slash Film Daily is one of the things I most look forward to doing each weekday. Ben Pearson and the other Slash Film contributors on the podcast provide insightful analysis of film news and have really interesting conversations about movies in general. I especially tend to have a blast listening to Ryan Scott's box office analysis and recent episodes ranking films in a particular series or in a particular director's filmography to tie in with certain new releases. For example, a Hunger Games ranking when The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes came out, or a Matthew Vaughn ranking when Argyle came out. If there's one thing I'd want altered, it's just for their DC coverage to be as frequent and thorough as their Marvel coverage, as I immensely enjoy their coverage of both, but there is far more of the latter than there is of the former. Thank you for that review. I planned to cover the DC stuff, hopefully on equal ground of the Marvel stuff, with the launch of the new DC universe. So I'm sure we'll have a bunch to talk about in the years to come as James Gunn and Peter Safran unroll that stuff officially for us. And yeah, we got to get back to doing those ranking episodes. It's a lot of work working on those because I have to like basically throw out the net and get as many Slash Film contributors as I can to participate in this stuff. So those require a little bit more behind the scenes, which is why we haven't done one in a little while, but I definitely enjoy doing those episodes. We need to try to be better about doing those more regularly. All right, last one for today. Magpies Pies says, I listen to Slash Film Daily. Well, daily. It lives up to its name and brings the latest film and TV news from the experts themselves. The podcast has found its rhythm since Peter left and flows extremely well, regardless of who is on. If this show somehow dissolves, it would be the equivalent of all things awful, like taking candy from a baby, watching the U.S. political system go through a presidential election cycle, war, and finding out your favorite TV show is ending. I'm not sure why there's so much hate in the world, so please don't let a good thing die. There are not enough stars in the universe to rate this show, but I'll settle for 5. Wow, Magpies Pies, that is a very strong. I would not I would not necessarily personally compare the potential dissolution of this show to any sort of real world war, but I appreciate the sentiment nonetheless, and thank you so much for writing in. You're probably joking there, and yeah, I appreciate that. We have a few more, but I'm going to save those for future episodes. But yeah, that's going to do it for today's show. Thank you very much, Bill, for jumping on and telling me, regaling me of your story with the Porsche experience and all of that, and putting your body on the line for our entertainment. So thanks for that.
You're very welcome, Ben.
Okay. That's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I will link to a bunch of them in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
When you need to work quickly and confidently, you need Grammarly. It's a trusted AI writing partner that helps you get work done faster with better writing. And it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said. Done.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.